Can I just for one second, just interrupt. Can someone please record? I'm not able to record.
Recording. I see the recording on the top corner over there. I don't know if you need to record it because it's already typed. And moment, I'm going to try to guitar it a little bit here if I can, if I have time. So let's begin. The pasuk in this week's parsha, that's where we are right now, says, Vayikravu, we are now in pasuk chaf test through Lamed Aleph. Let me read these psukim, and we'll read a few Rashis together, and then we'll see a Vayikravu Yemei Yisrael Lamut. The days of Yisrael are coming to an end. He is going to die. Vayikra Livni Yosef. He calls his son Yosef. Vayomer Lo. He says to him, Imna Matzasi Chein Beinecha. If I've chesed ve'emes, do for me chesed ve'emes. What's the chesed ve'emes? Al not tikbareini v'mitzrayim. Do not bury me in Egypt. This is what Yaakov requests to Yosef was. V'shachavti ma'osai, I can rest in the, with my fathers, meaning say Abram and Sarah and Yitzchak and Marata Machpela. Un satani v'mitzrayim, you have to carry my bones from Egypt. U'kvartani b'kfurasam, I want to be buried with them. By Yomar, Yosef said back, Anochi esech idvarecha, I'll do it. However, Yaakov's not done. He says back to his son, even though his son just said, I'll do it. He says, Vayomer, he shavali. I want you to swear. Remember, he wanted him to grab his thigh, under his thigh. So he's not comfortable with Yosef. He wants a shvua. Vayishavalo. And he swore to him. Vayishtachu Yisrael al Rosh Amita. And then Yisrael bows down on the top of the bed. So it's unclear who's bowing to who, but according to one pshat that we'll see in Rashi that we're going to focus on, Davar Acher al Rosh Amita, why did Yaakov bow down? Did he bow down to his son because maybe he was a king? Says Rashi, al shahaita mitato shlema. He bowed down to his bed because his bed was complete. I mean, the truth is, I don't know if he bowed down to his bed. Maybe. I think it is. He bowed, like, meaning to say, giving thanks to Hashem that his bed, where the children were made from, there was no Rasha. V'lo haya v'ein ba Rasha. Lord of Dukir says, Shara Yosef Melechu. Yosef is the king. V'o, not only was he a king, Shenishba lebein agoyim. He was kidnapped amongst the goyim, Baharehu Omed Bitsidko. So in other words, this pshat in Rashi says basically that Yaakov bowed to the bed or to Hashem, giving thanks to Hashem, that all of his children are tzaddikim. Now he sees it. Now, the kasha that we asked, the simple kasha is, where do you see anywhere that he is a tzaddik? Because at this point, he's been with him for 17 years. 17 years, Yaakov and Yosef have been together. And now all of a sudden, what changed? Because he's ready to take your bones to Israel and bury them. Now, this moment, Yosef, number one, what happened now at this moment that Yaakov recognizes the tzidkus of Yosef? They've been around for a long time. That's the kasha asked. The two things that Rashi writes here, but we know that everybody is a tzaddik. Number one, Shara Yosef Melech. Melech is the king. Shara Yosef Melechu. Yosef is a king. And he was kidnapped amongst the goyim, and he's standing in his sitkus. How do these two qualities of Yosef being a melech and that he was kidnapped amongst the goyim equal harehu omed bitzidkaso? That's not really make sense? What is it that now all of a sudden Joseph recognize, Yaakov recognizes Yosef Tzidkus, and he's bowing, thanking Hashem that he had no Russia amongst his children, his offspring? Very strange point. So let's take a look at the Mefarshim here. Okay. Now the Ma'arik tries to answer for Rashi, one of the Mefarshim of Rashi that we bring. He said, Yaakov saw that Yosef, his son, was ready to do the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, and he wanted to honor his father, and he was ready to do it industriously and diligently. He was running, he was mizaris to do the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em. I asked a little kasha here. He had to take the shvua. He had to ask him two times to take the shvua. It doesn't seem like he was so zaris, but we could debate what was the reason that Yosef didn't want to take the shvua the first time and that Yaakov had to push him again. It's unclear. I think I found some mefarshim that indicate that he didn't want to have the shvua because he didn't want to do the burial. He had some tension. Moshe Segala wrote a note here that there's no indication from the sources that I quoted that Yosef didn't want to do the burial of his father in Israel, the bones. But the issue was that he didn't want to take a shvua for some shvua reason. But that's not a negative that he didn't want to do it. He wanted to do his father's wishes, didn't want to take a shvua. Fine, I have to research this point to see where I saw that Yosef was reluctant to even listen to his father's request, as opposed to reluctant to take the shvua. He was ready to do without the shvua. That's Segala's pshat in Orachaim and Orachama, and I'm not sure. I remember, we didn't find it yet, but I believe that we saw that Yosef was uncomfortable even doing the shvua. Even doing, not the shvua, but even doing the burial. But I'm going to look that up, okay? So that's the Ma'arik. Ma'arik said that he was so zaris to do the mitzvah, that shows he was a tzaddik. That shows he was a tzaddik, the fact that he was zaris to run to do the mitzvah for his father. I don't see where he was zaris. I see the opposite, that he was dragging his feet. Moshe Segala debates. Fine. Rav Chenoch Leibowitz asked also this kasha, and he says is this. How does the Rachelach's kasha is another kasha we asked, I guess, the day of the shir also, or the day before, something like that. I don't remember. He says, one minute. What's so big a tzaddik, asks Rachelach Leibowitz, that he was ready to bury his father and bury his father's bones. He's the king. The father asks you to do me a favor and bury me in Israel, in the Marata Machpelah. What the heck is the big deal? Why does that make you a tzaddik? You're the king. You have power. You have no obstacles to get this job done. Who doesn't want to honor their father's request? That makes you a tzaddik? Because you're ready to go bury your father and follow and listen to his death wish? Is he begging you on his deathbed to do something for you that's no skin off your nose and you're called a tzaddik? That's Rav Chenoch Leibowitz's kasha. He also asks other kashas. He said, what normal person wouldn't want to do this for their father? What kind of guy wouldn't do it? Fine. That's kasha number two. So kasha number one was, why now at this moment does he see the tzaddik? Kasha number two is, why did this episode at all show that he's a tzaddik? The fact that he was zaris to do the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, as the Ma'arik tries to explain. Fine. Rav Chenoch Leibowitz has a teretz to this kasha. I'm not going to bring the teretz because I didn't like it. The reason why I didn't like it is identified in Moshe Segala's notes. It's exactly what I didn't like about it. I don't want to get into it. It's a whole interlude between Moshe Segala and myself. Let's go weiter, okay? We're not going to bring Rav Chenoch Leibowitz's teretz today. We're going to bring a different teretz. Now,
can I ask a question?
Of course.
Was there not a travel restriction? Nobody could leave Israel.
Well, we're going to bring someone who says something like that. Okay, there is some positions like that, that Paro did not want to let go of the bones. Paro wanted Yaakov's bones to stay in Mitzrayim. That is true. And Yaakov had to be a little, yeah, it was kind of, it's tough, horrible with Paro. That's the Yecheskel is identifying that came to be the Lashas Maisa, and Yosef wanted to take Yaakov's bones to Mitzrayim. Paro rejected his request, and then Yaakov had Yosef said to Paro, forgive me, hey, if you want me to get rid of not my father's shvuah, I'm not going to fulfill your shvuah. What was the shvuah that Yosef made to Paro? Paro didn't know 70 languages. He didn't know Hebrew. And Yosef did. And Paro was very embarrassed that he didn't know as many languages as Yosef. He didn't know all of them. So Paro made Yosef take a shvuah. Don't tell anybody. So Yosef threatened Paro and said, okay, if you don't want me to fulfill my shvuah to my father to bury him in Egypt, Israel, I'm gonna not follow your shvuah. I'm gonna tell everybody that you didn't go to Ulpan. Okay. And that's the end of that. And then Paro gave in. So there was some stress involved. There was some stress of political stress involved that Yosef had to overcome. That is true. But does that make you a tzaddik, that you're able to do a little bit of back and forth and a little power play with Paro in order to get your father buried? What's the big deal? Just to get somebody protects you, to get a travel restriction now. If some guy gets you a visa to get to South Africa now, and he goes and calls in some favor that someone gave him at the border patrol, does that make him a tzaddik? That makes him a guy who's a mover and a shaker. He's a shaking mover. That's all he is. He's not a tzaddik. You hear what I'm saying, Yecheskel? That doesn't sound like something that makes you into a tzaddik.
I mean, given Paro's behavior in other circumstances, Yosef could have been risking his life, just to ask.
It's hard to hear. You know, maybe it could be. Theoretically, this could have been a life-threatening situation. I accept. In fact, I think I tried to say something like that. We're using the Ramban. And it could be. I see that I tried to use that. However, I still don't see that this... It could still just be that he loved his father and wanted to do this for his father. You agree with that? You agree that this, even if we say that he was in danger with Paro, if he would have tried to blackmail Paro, etc., still that doesn't indicate that he was a tzaddik. That indicates that he loved his dad. Lots of people love their dad and they're not tzaddikim. Lots of people want to do things for their father and they're not tzaddikim. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't show that he's omed b'tzidko. It's hard to hear that is a definition of a tzaddik, someone who's ready to risk his life theoretically for his father, fulfill his father's death wish. That sounds like something many, many non-tzaddikim could have. If their father played soccer with them and baseball and bought him toys and loved him and was good to him, he'll do that for his dad. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's all I'm saying. So now I see here, I'm going to try to go to my pshat that I brought. If we look, let's jump ahead a few psukim to chapter 48, Pasuk Zayin. Chapter Memches, Pasuk Zayin. That interchange took place. Yosef took the shvuah. It was over. He was in. Now, after the fact, when Yaakov now makes Menashe and Ephraim his two, like his grandchildren into his children, and it says, "Umuladetcha she'oladetacharem lechayu." Any children you have, Yosef, post Menashe and Ephraim are going to be yours, and the rest are mine. But now look at Pasuk Zayin. Vani, this is Yaakov talking to Yosef. Bevoi mipadan. When I came from Padan Aram, Mesa alai Rachel. Rachel died be'eretz Knan. She died in Eretz Knan b'derech, on the road while they were traveling. Ba'od kivras eretz lavo Ephrasa. They were on the road. They didn't even get into Ephrat. Be'ekbarei Hashem, I buried her over there on the street. B'derech Ephrat, he beis lachem. On the road, Rashi says, he buried him. Now, Now, Vayar Yisrael b'nei Yosef, Vayomer mi ele. Okay, let's go to Rashi on Pasuk Zayin. Rashi says, Ve'ek bere Hashem, Dibra maskel ek bere Hashem, look at these words. Ve'lo holachti afilu lebeis lechem lachnis el art. I didn't even have the common courtesy, I'm adding in common courtesy, to bury her in the land. She was on the road in Beit Lechem. And now look, Ve'yadati, says Rashi. Ve'yadati, I know, says Yaakov to Yosef, Sheyesh belibcha alai, that you are upset with me. It's in your heart. You have something against me in your heart. That you did not bury my, that I didn't bury your mother in Eretz Yisrael. I left her on the street road over there. Aval dalecha, says Rashi. You should know. Shal pi adibur kavarti Hashem. I buried your mother on the road because Hashem told me to. Shetiyeh la'azar levanea, la'ezra levanea. She should be helping her offspring. Kishi yigle osam nebuzardan. That when they get kicked out and thrown into galus, ve'yu ovrim derech sham, and the Jewish people are going to be walking by. Yatsas Rachel al kivra. She's going to go out of her grave. Ubocha. She's going to cry. Mevakeshet alem rachamim. She is going to beg for their mercy. Shenemar kol beramah nishma v'akadosh baruch hu meshiva. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers Rachel's prayers. Everybody knows this. Yesh schar lefulaseich. There is reward for your actions. Ne'um Hashem b'shavu banim ligvulam. I'm going to bring your kids in. So what do we see over here? We see over here, Rashi tells us after the Shavua, after the fact of what happened on Yaakov's bed, deathbed, Yaakov has another conversation with Yosef. And he tells him, I know you're angry with me that I did not bury your mother in a proper burial place in Eretz Yisrael. I buried her on the street. But I have a good reason. Hashem told me to do this. And this is going to be inuring to the children and the grandchildren when they're suffering in exile. Rachel Imenu will be there. Now, my question is, first of all, why didn't Yaakov tell Yosef this back then at the Shavua when he made him swear? I know you're upset with me. Now look carefully here. Now we see some stress for Yaakov and Yosef. Not just political stress like Yechezkel Sher and the Ramban say. No, not just that Paro is going to say no and I'm going to have to do some fancy footwork to get my father in. We see another problem. We see that Yaakov, Yosef, was upset with Yaakov that Yaakov did not bury his mama in a proper burial with everybody else. Yosef's upset about it, and Yaakov knows it. He knows that he's upset. And the same exact thing that Yaakov did to Yosef's mama, now he wants all of a sudden for me to go and bury him in Eretz Yisrael. What a chutzpah. That's for Shalom to say this about your father. What a chutzpah. The same thing that he didn't do to my mother, he wants me to now do for him. Then I'm going to have to go fight with Paro. That is in Yosef's heart and Yaakov knows it. Now we have another question. Why didn't Yaakov do the normal thing and tell his son this anger that he had, that he knew that his son had? Why didn't he tell him when he made him make the Shavua back then? That was the time to let him know. That's the time to let him know. I know you're upset, but I have a good answer to your kasha. I have a teretz to your kasha, Yaakov Yosef. Hashem made me do it. And Hashem has a plan for your mother. He didn't say anything. He left him hanging. He left Yosef hanging in a lurch, thinking that his father is a hypocrite. That's the word I'm looking for, a hypocrite. You yourself don't bury mama where she belongs, but you want me to bury you? Forget about it. I don't know. It's going to be complicated. I got paro. I got stress. I don't know. Now we see a tzaddik. Now we could see a tzaddik. Everybody see carefully here. Now we see Yosef overcoming some pain that he has about his own father and what his father did to his mother. And still, he is ready to go forward in doing it, even though his father did not address the issue when he should have. It would have been much easier for Yosef to accept to take the shvu and do it if his father had given him that critical piece of information that Hashem was responsible for Rachel's burial place on the road of Derech Beit Lechem. But he didn't do that. And I think this is the point that showed who Yosef really is. Yosef was a tzaddik. Why? Rashi says he was a melech and he was nishba ben agoyim. So what do we see from those two points? How does being a melech make you a tzaddik? We know it doesn't. A melech, you can be lots of melechs, arishayim gemurim, as we know. How does being kidnapped amongst the goyim make you a tzaddik? What does Rashi mean? The answer is, based on everything we've said so far, very clear. Yosef was a melech. Nobody tells him what to do. He tells everybody what to do. That's him. And not only that, he was amongst the goyim. This guy, it's a despite. It's an afalpi. Afalpi that he was a melech. Even though he was a melech who doesn't take orders, he gives orders. And even though he was nishba ben goyim, he was kidnapped amongst the goyim and he had no concept of birkas haTorah and musar and working on himself, no vad musar, no namashgiach, nothing. He was all alone over there. And still he had the ability to go forward when he did not want to do it because he knew that this is what his father's rush was and it was purely for the mitzvah of kibud av v'em, even though in Yosef's mind, Yaakov did not deserve this request. He did not deserve to have his bones buried according to Yosef's understanding, and Yaakov knew it. Yaakov knew that Yosef was upset with his father. He knew it, and his father didn't tell him a teretz. And I think those two things together, now everybody, Eitan Dreilich asked me, or someone asked, why didn't he tell him right away? Answer is because if we would have told him right away, you know, I know you're upset with me about Mama, but this was Hashem, he decreed it, then we would not see who Yosef really was. If he would have told him at the time of the Shavua, please do this for me, even though you're upset with your mother, I have a good answer, good explanation. That would not demonstrate the tzidkus of Yosef. Yaakov wanted to put his son in a pressure position and hit him in a soft spot and see, does my son have the ability to take my order even though he's mad at me and even though he's the king and even though he was amongst the goyim his whole life, does he have the capability to handle this? The second Yosef said, I'm in, and he took that shvua on the bed, Yaakov knew. Now, only now, the fact that he was feeding them for 17 years, the fact that he was taking care of everybody was not a big proof of Yosef's tzidkus. That was nothing. This was a test to see, is he ready to do the mitzvah of kibud av v'em, despite me not giving him his answer. Now, what's very funny here is that at the end, does everybody understand my piece, what I'm saying here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, clear? One point that I see here is that I asked everybody to turn off the tape recorders at the end of the shiur 6 years ago. And Moshe Segala writes here, unfortunately, most of the shiur was not recorded. Okay, so I did not record what I said here, but I think I'm going to do it now. I'm going to, with the recorder on, I'm going to say a little bit of what I think I told Rabbi Bella this morning I said back then, even though I don't remember it, I don't have it in my notebooks. But I remember that my Rebbe, he should live and be well, Rabbi Green, used to do this to me many times, many, many times. This was his stock and barrel, I don't know if that's the right word to use. What's it? Stock and barrel? Is that the right word, Yechezkel? Stock and trade? His motorcycle.
Stock and trade would be better, yeah.
Trade? Stock and trade? Yeah. His stock and trade is, I don't know what it is now, but I know it was, that if people have kashas on him, people have a kasha on Rabbi Green, if the goal of them asking the kasha is to be educated and to learn and to understand what he's saying, he would always answer. Always answer. Always, always answer. Well, I can't say that. For me, he always answered my kashas. Always. When I was coming from a place of really trying to understand him. But when my goal was not to understand him, but rather because I was upset with him, that he was asking me to do something that he himself, in my eyes, didn't do. I saw a contradiction in him, and I was angry. I don't even know. It happened. It happened. For sure, it happened with us. He would never answer me. He would leave me in the lurch, sitting there in pain with no terutzim. And he said, I'm sorry. I can't help you. I cannot help you. I'm sorry. For example, one example, I don't know if this is what I gave 10 years ago. No, you know what? I'm not going to say that one. This shouldn't be on the recorder. That would make sense that if this is the story that I wanted to tell you, that I didn't want on the tape recorder. So since we're being recorded now, I'm not going to say it. But this is something that he always did when people had kashas on his behavior and his the way he behaves. He would never, ever give a real teretz to anybody except those people who really wanted to understand what he was doing. And I think that that's what we see here. And that was clearly a test for all of his Talmidim, clearly, and all for the people who are not his Talmidim, to be stuck in a situation where you don't know what he's doing, you don't know why he's doing it, and you have to really get to a healthy, positive place of emunas chachamim. And then he'll give you what he was really doing all along, and you will be able to grow from the experience. And that's exactly what Yaakov did to Yosef here. It's Mefurish in the Rashi is what I'm saying. There's no doubt about it. Yaakov did not tell Yosef about this undercurrent that was going on between the two of them. He left it hidden about the fact that Yosef was angry about the fact that his mother wasn't buried. He didn't talk about it at the time when any normal person would have talked about it, at the time of the Shavuah. When he's asking, he should have immediately said something. He didn't. He held it back till after his son passed the test. After his son passed the test, he bowed down on the bed, thanked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for giving him a tzaddik. And a few psukim later, he tells his son, you know, I know you're upset about this, but believe me, there's a real good reason why your mother, my wife, was buried where she is. She's going to have a critical role in all of our children and our descendants. This is the mark of a tzaddik. This is it. This is the definition that if you go to the Mesilas Yesharim, you will find. It is not just doing all the mitzvahs and not doing the averas. It is doing them because Hashem wants you to do it. Doing it because it is your Yirat Shamayim that is motivating your behavior, and not the fact that you're a nice guy, a generous guy, or an uptight person who's very makbid and very uptight, so he follows every letter of the law of halacha. That is not the mark of a tzaddik. Not at all. That's just the way Hashem made you. He made you to be a person who's fun, a person who's cool, a person who's generous, a person who's whatever it is. I love learning. Even learning, we've said a million times, you put the guy who's the top masmid in the yeshiva and I stick him in the university or in the laboratory, he's going to learn all day over there too. If that's what, just stick him in. He loves learning. He'll learn, whether it's university, Torah, whatever. He loves davening. That's not a tzaddik doing the mitzvahs. A tzaddik is doing the mitzvahs only because Hashem said. Only because Hashem said. And how do you find that? How do you find that place? That's only when you are confronted with your free choice and no one else can see. You're high. You're all alone in your own world by yourself. Are you going to do the right thing when no one's watching? That's one way to test it. Or when you have this stress that you see something going wrong, and you don't know all the facts, but you're upset about something, and you still are able to go forward despite your fear or pain or whatever it is, and you still go forward only because Hashem said there's no other reason, that will define who's a real tzaddik. That will define it. And Yosef proved himself in this test. Now, for us now, in this very difficult time, everybody's stuck in bidud. I know everybody's having a good time now with the color war in the dorms, and that's a very good thing. I'm happy that the Kiva and Nachman and Eitan, everybody got together to do this project. If I left somebody out, forgive me, of the games. It's very good. But we have to understand that regardless of how uncomfortable we are and how difficult our physical situation is right now, this is when it's going to test whether or not you're the real guy or the fake guy. It's very easy to learn and to, well, not for everybody, but it's much easier to learn when the base medrash is packed and everything's happening and everybody's together and you have your, you know, all of your comforts around you. It's much easier to do the right thing. Much easier. It's much harder to do it when things are off kilter, when your schedule is not working so well. Your chavrus is getting disconnected every 2 minutes because of the telephone. It's much harder to stay focused and to stay determined to do the right thing, to be generous, to be kind when you've been in quarantine with the same people for so long. It's much harder than when everybody's, you know, got their own room and everybody's, you know, functioning normally. This is the time when we're going to see who's able to do the right thing, because Hashem said, and who is able to do the right thing because it's easy, it's natural for me to do these things. I love being in yeshiva, blah, 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 blah. Let's see when you don't love it being in yeshiva, when it's not so comfortable, when it's hard. That's going to be the real test to see who is the tzaddik and who is really growing in the deepest way. And my bracha to all of us is that we can make it through this very, very difficult time. There's nothing easy. My son just got the corona. So we're all locked up also in the house. And nobody's comfortable. Very uncomfortable. Now it's the time to see who's going to step up in this discomfort to rise to a new level of growth and to maintain that growth to propel us forward to when Hashem ends this machala for all of us. Everybody have a good day. Batzlacha Rabbah. We'll continue with the